This summer, NPR's All Things Considered took a deep dive into the often mysterious, even to them, world of men. Stories that stretched our understanding of what it means to have a Y chromosome in the 21st century. We heard from small men, large men, stay-at-home men, gay, rugby-playing men. But this week, the Men in America series comes to an end. We want to check in with NPR's Melissa Gray. She was the lead producer. She's in Washington. Melissa, welcome.
Thank you, Robin.
And also here now is Peter O'Dowd. He wrote one of the stories for the series. Peter, always good to see you.
Thanks, Robin.
And Melissa, start with you. Why did you do this?
I did this because I have two dogs in this fight, Robin. I have a five-year-old son and a three-year-old son. And as a person who is female, I've really only thought about women's issues most of my life. And then all of a sudden, here I have two little boys and wondering to myself, what world am I preparing them for? And the more I thought about it, the more I realized that my own notions of what it means to be a man and what masculinity is rooted in really the notions of my father's generation and my husband's generation. And it wasn't really squaring up with how things are shaking out these days.
Right. In your dad's case, it's a silent generation. Very different now.
Very, very different.
Yeah. So you broke down stereotypes. You looked at the changing role of men. Just before we move on, what stuck with you or maybe challenged some thinking that you had?
There are a couple of things that stuck with me. One being there was a fellow in Cheryl Corley's piece from Urban Prep, a young man who lives in Chicago in a neighborhood that is just, you know, it's you could be at the wrong place at the wrong time and your whole life is either ruined or changed dramatically. He was the valedictorian of his class, and his name was Stephen Clark. While his speech at his graduation ceremony was moving. He took a selfie because he wanted to show the world that not all black men from Chicago are thugs. What really got me was the story of his dad, and it was a subtle thing in the piece, but his dad retired and escorted his son to and from school every day to make sure that he wasn't in the wrong place at the wrong time. Mm. And that's a dedication to me that really spoke volumes about what it means to be a man, to be responsible, to look after, to really help the next generation of men grow up to be responsible.
Down to quitting your job so you can take them to school every day. Well, quite something. Another story from July. This was Marvin Ramos from New York, a teen dad whose dad left him. And the mother of Marvin's young daughter was also raised without a dad. In this tape, we hear Marvin ask Stephanie, his girlfriend, what it meant for her not to have a father.
Did your dad not being there affect you?
I mean, I didn't get my high school diploma. Sorry. I did want a dad. I did want one so badly. Because all my friends had one. I always seen them get picked up by them in school. They will have someone to go hug. And I never had that. I never had a dad to come and say stuff, you know. That's why I hate guys that run away from their daughters or sons.
Oh, Melissa, that one killed me. Well, how did that resonate in house where I'm sure these pieces were much discussed?
We had a lot of people just saying that that piece caught their ears and moved them. And I heard that piece about eight times, and it never failed to get me. And you think about how actions, one person's actions, spiral and affect other people's lives. And that particular case, you can see how one father not being a father affects his daughter, affects possibly her child, affects the relationship she's going to have with the child's father.
And we saw dedicated men. And Peter O'Dowd's reporting, Peter, I want to bring you back in. You reported on men who follow their wives' careers and how they handle the stress that comes with that decision. So what were some of the things you heard?
Yeah, well, we know that more men are following their wives' or partners' careers. I mean, just look at the college degree attainment. For the men who are doing it, I found that sometimes they're forced to account in a way that women aren't. One expert told me that when a woman follows her husband's job, she's considered a good wife, right? When a man follows his wife's job, he's considered unemployed. And so I found this sort of play out in Arizona, where I met a couple named Ricky Nussel and Amanda Serif. And Ricky's wife, Amanda, is a doctor. And he knew from the very beginning that if he wanted to be with Amanda, that he was going to have to give up his own career. And that's what he did. He gave up a good job in the oil industry. He was set for a raise. And they moved, first of all, to Kirksville, Missouri, which Ricky found was not an easy place to get a job. And he found some really meager work.
It did definitely suck. One of the jobs was shift work.
Bacon maker at a factory, 10 bucks an hour. Tough work for a guy with a biology degree. Ricky took a second part-time environmental mapping job that paid minimum wage.
It was very hard for me to be open and share with people. And they said, what do you do? I would normally just say I worked for the conservation department. You don't want people to look down on you or think you made a bad decision, like you shouldn't have moved. Now you're making bacon.
So this accounting was really difficult for Ricky, even though he said he was raised in a family where gender roles weren't really an issue.
So, Peter, did this change some of the ways you think about either being a man or how you view men?
As a journalist, it was one of the harder stories I've had to do. I mean, sitting in the living room of a stranger, of another man. In one case, I also interviewed a couple, two men who were in the similar situation as Ricky and Amanda. And sitting in their living rooms and asking really, you know, difficult, probing questions, man to man, about what it means to maybe be in a non-traditional masculine role. I remember leaving one of those interviews and just drenched in sweat and of the thousands of interviews I've done in my career, that has never happened to me. And so what it says, I think, as a journalist and as a man, that we are not equipped. We've never really been trained or we've never been encouraged to really have these conversations with fellow men in these types of situations.
Well, Melissa, just how did listeners respond?
It was fascinating how listeners responded. I mean, we had so much acknowledgement of, like, you know, from guys saying, you know, you're right. We just don't talk about this. We had a lot of guys who were, like, confessional, like, I'm supposed to be this I'm supposed to be this, stoic, not feeling man, and yet I crumble watching my kids sleep at night, but I keep it quiet. I don't tell anyone this is how I feel. It's tremendous love. But on the flip side of that, one of the things that was really sort of heartening to see were how many listeners, and I suspect they were younger men, said, you know what, a man can be whatever a man wants to be. And if somebody questions you about your manhood, to heck with them.
I can hear really younger listeners saying, why are they having this series on men? Because they already have so many different views than people older than them. Melissa Gray, the producer behind the NPR Men series. It wraps up Friday. Can't wait. And here and now is Peter O'Dowd, was a contributor. He's here in the studio. Thanks to both of you.
Sure enough. Thank you.
Thanks, Robin.